Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Community Living Show on the NCRA Broadcast Networks. That's the National Campus and Community Radio Association networks throughout British Columbia and throughout Canada. I'm, of course, Kelly Rayburn. Michael Rubin is on assignment today for this week. So I'm trying to open up the episode sheets, and it seems to be going forever. So I'll just make my point anyways. we have a call-in speaker, and of course I'll mention him in just a few moments. Right now, I'd like to talk to you about what happened on Monday, happened in Victoria, and I've got the 24-hour newspaper to explain the details. The region expected to be a short one, but the Premier Christy Clark and her cabinet were fully sworn by Lieutenant Judith Glutchen at the Government House on Victoria Monday. These ministers have about 1, 2, 3, 4, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. About 20 cabinet ministers have been sworn in. And, of course, not surprise, Rich Coleman is still Minister of Energy and Mines. Michelle Stilwell, a Minister of Social Development and Social Innovation. And Shirley Bond, Minister of Jobs and Tourism and Skills Training and Minister Responsible of Labor. So, anyways, now that I've got my spreadsheet coming up slowly. you're not on the air. Hey, hang on. I was going to introduce to you in a moment here. We are now joined by Paul Timkue, you're the BC Caucus member from Victoria. How are you doing?
Hi there, Kelly. It's actually Paul Gilbert.
I'm sorry.
I'm the BC Disability Caucus spokesperson.
Yes.
I was quite surprised by our current premier's claim that she's offering a stability. That's what she says. Her job is to provide stability and focus.
Right.
That was kind of interesting.
So, what do you think of the cabinet ministers that has happened on Monday?
Well, I was a little surprised that Rich Coleman stopped being deputy premier and stopped being responsible for everything.
Right.
He was responsible for housing and energy, mines and resources, but also for natural gas.
Right.
And they've split it up and divided his roles around. I don't see anybody responsible for being deputy minister. I don't know who now is Christy Clark's right-hand person.
Right.
They're not listing him as her right-hand person.
No, no.
But Sam Sullivan suddenly has a job.
Yes.
Not a big job, but a job.
No.
Our nemesis, Michelle Stilwell, has her role back as
social development,
mm-hmm. and Stephanie Cadeau is also responsible for children, which is sort of. I was disturbed that Stephanie and Michelle won their ridings again after their performances in government.
Right.
But 100 children's deaths is something that should have lost you some votes, but didn't.
Yeah, now that's interesting to note about the missing children I wouldn't say the missing children, the murdered children
The children died. They died in care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was pretty sad to hear on that on the news.
Yeah, so. Yeah, that was it was very, very difficult. And the reviews of her ministry, of course, were always very kept on calling for more funding. But they had an austerity program on as far as children in care was concerned, and which is shocking, considering that generally people consider children pretty important. Yeah. But the Liberal government didn't. But it's interesting to see that Sam Sullivan stepped up to the plate and has a job for a month.
Yeah. Now we have Mike Bernier, who's the Minister of Education.
Yes, they didn't replace him.
No.
He comes from a very safe riding. I'm surprised they didn't replace him, but maybe now he's going to try and provide the funding that the Supreme Court told the BC that they had to provide to, but they won't have a chance to do that since they'll be voted out as soon as they give their throne speech.
All right. So, and then Mike DeJong is a no surprise stranger of Minister of Finance.
Yeah, he's he replaced what's her name? I can never. Mike DeJong was the same job. The one that I was thinking of that replaced somebody was Andrew Wilkinson.
Right.
He actually is a lawyer, so he was sort of an appropriate person for Ministry of Justice to replace Susan Antoine.
Didn't Andrew Wilkinson became the Minister of Advanced Education or something?
No, Minister of Advanced Education is...
It's now Linda Reed.
Yeah.
But she used to be the Speaker of the House
at
the time, so...
Yeah, I don't know what her background is as far as advanced education goes, but I guess it doesn't matter much since she'll only be there for an hour or so.
Right.
Ellis Ross is Minister of Natural Gas now. And housing, which are two of Coleman's prior jobs.
Right. Yeah.
But he is a First Nations chief.
Right. Now, I'm just looking over at the 24-hour newspaper that was published yesterday. I know Rich Coleman is the Minister of Energy Mines. I know there's probably going to be another rally about the Stop Site C campaign. And I'm just wondering about their energy mines with BC Hydro and stuff like that with the cabinet.
Yeah, I imagine they're sort of positioning themselves to be able to speak on those sorts of issues.
Mm-hmm.
As far as energy and mines, well, Rich Coleman will still be speaking in terms of energy and mines. I imagine his position has shrunk significantly, but he can still speak out against in favor of sites of the pipelines and things like that.
Right.
And Site C. So he still has that responsibility, I imagine, as a critic, or will as a critic. But so, in a sense, what she's done is she's given people their critic before the portfolios.
Yeah. Now, Justin Rusted is the Minister of Aboriginal Relations and Reconciliation. And I know many First Nations shows, for example, and I know one of my dear friend of mine, Gunnar G. O'Sullivan, who talks theoretically on the major issues on missing Aboriginal women in northern BC.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any?
The Highway of Tears.
The Highway of Tears, yes.
Yes, if they had only provided a reasonable cost bus service from
public transit
along that some form of public transit to get people out of Prince Rupert and down Highway 16, it would have saved a lot of people's lives.
Right.
Not a lot of economic development going on in there either. It's poverty and being at risk like that go hand in hand, and that's what you had. A lot of poor Aboriginal women who hitchhiked.
Mm.
And died as a result.
Well, I know for a fact that, I mean, bctransit.com's website here, the Highway 16 Transit Service is part of the comprehensive Highway 16 five-point action plan from the Ministry of Transportation and Infrastructure, which is Todd Stone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And no surprise there, has committed to $2.4 million in funding over a three-year period to improve transit service along Highway 16 corridor. The collaboration with the community leaders, BC Transit has undertaken detailed analysis to confirm feasibility, scope, and costs of extended or enhanced intercity public transit linkage along Highway 16. So
they've committed to it. Has they spent any money yet?
No. Yeah. True.
It's always interesting when a government has budgets, but they don't actually spend them. But I thought that there was a bus service that was put in place.
Yeah, but I believe it, that they are planning on it right now as we speak. And some of the information is coming through the public consultation and the next steps that are happening through public transit, through the Highway 16 inner city places.
Well, it certainly did take a lot of tragedies for that to happen.
It certainly did. But, I mean, it could have been more earlier than that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, instead of giving $1 billion to the 1% in BC as a tax break, they could have spent some money on transportation.
Mm. Right. So, I'm just going about to do another topic here. You were I got it through your phone, and I don't even know where my phone went. It's probably on the other studio, anyways. You were going to talk about another issue. I forgot what it was.
Okay. I was interested to note that. There's all the pages that I printed. I was for some reason I was expecting the pages that I printed to be white and they're yellow.
Yeah, I'm going to check through Facebook, but like I said, it's taking me a long time to do this through the computer. Okay.
I was quite interested to see that. I thought this was sort of a good sign that Jeremy Corbyn's new government has two new members with MPs with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And they were not just people with disabilities, they were disability advocates.
Right.
Which is unusual. I mean, for example, Michelle Stilwell wasn't a disability advocate. She was she did inspirational speaking on sports and disability, she wasn't really a disability advocate.
Oh, right, yeah.
I guess Sam Sullivan comes closest because he set up all those various disability organizations, but he's not really an advocate either in terms of pushing for disability rights.
Yeah.
But the NDP doesn't have an MP, an MLA, or an MP in Canada with a disability.
Mm.
And I thought that was something worth talking about now that the election's gone, and I don't have to worry about damaging their chances. But
yeah.
The NDP equity policy really made them that they have where they focused on. Their policy, their original policy was about increasing the proportion of women.
Okay.
And they've done that. And they've also increased the proportion of Aboriginal and Indigenous MPs,
mm-hmm.
which they have some good ones. But they haven't had a single person with a disability as an MP, MLA yet, as an MP federally.
Right.
The idea that I think is hard for the NDP is that they have to. The point of having equity candidates is that they come from marginalized communities, mm-hmm. and they should be able to represent gender diversity, things like that. But also that they're people who understand marginalization,
right?
And they wanted to give them a fair chance to win a nomination, so they had. Candidates from diverse communities that have more barriers to overcome. In Columbia, Revelstoke riding, the NDP nomination set for that was set for October, last October, was the when Norm MacDonald left as the MLA.
Mm-hmm.
They ended up with a white male in the riding as in an NDP stronghold as the equity candidate.
Right.
During the nomination run, Spring Hawes, a former town councillor, is a woman with a disability, was the only person that was contesting the riding at the point at one point, and they she was going to be approved, and they dropped in another candidate, Jerry Taft,
mm-hmm.
into the mix, and Jerry Taft ended up winning the nomination without disclosing what his equity status was.
Okay.
After he got the riding to run for the NDP, he came out as being bisexual. He's married,
yes.
Or living with a woman, and nobody knew he was bisexual. It was something that was either in the closet or what have you, but. He was a secret bisexual.
Okay.
To me, it doesn't seem to be much of a barrier.
What do you mean by barrier?
Anyway? Well, people with that represent equity groups generally do so because they come from marginalized populations.
Okay.
Somebody who's not even disclosing to the world that they're bisexual, and is living with a woman or married. Right. How could he possibly be experiencing discrimination for being bisexual? The NDP ended up losing what was a safe riding,
mm-hmm.
And barring Spring Hawes from being able to run in it, by putting Jerry Taft in there at the last minute.
Right.
So. It's a very controversial issue about running people with disabilities as candidates,
mm-hmm.
and whenever you bring up equity, right. people always say, "Well, we want qualified people."
Okay.
Well, Spring Hawes was more than qualified to contest that riding as former town councillor, mm-hmm. And strong social democrat, but she was barred. Simply because she had a disability, as far as I can tell.
Mm.
The president of the BCNDP, Craig Keating, once told me that disability is not part of the BCNDP brand. I found that very disturbing at the time,
right.
And still do. Mm. I believe that the NDP caucus of elected MLAs do see disability as something that's relevant to the party.
Okay.
But the NDP administration does not.
Mm.
So that's how we managed to lose an excellent potential MLA and lose the riding at the same time.
Okay. I'm going to take a station break. Can you hold for just a moment?
Certainly.
Okay. We're talking to Paul Gilbert, who's the member of the BC Disability Caucus, and we'll continue on with the conversation in a moment. You're tuned into the Late Night Show. I'm, of course, Kelly Rayburn. Michael Rubin is on assignment for this week, and we will be back in just a moment.
I think the news midweek, when the midweek news broke, that Teo Dezar wasn't going to be playing in this game.
Growing sport, and to do it on a university campus with an educational message behind it.
They'll be facing off against all the big teams from all the other conferences and the nationals.
Want to be a CITR sports broadcaster? Looking for a cool way to get involved in UBC sports? Then email sports101@citr.ca or come by our station in the Nest to find out more. See you soon.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help. You know I need someone.
you ever feel uncomfortable or unsafe walking around campus at night, there's an AMS service dedicated to helping anyone trying to get across campus alone at night. We're SafeWalk, and we have your back. Call us at 604-822-5355 to request a transfer, or check out our website at ams.ubc.ca/safewalk for more information on hours and policies.
Okay, we're back on the Community Living Show here on the NCRE Radio Networks, the National Campus and Community Radio Association Networks. I'm Kelly Rayburn. Along with me is Paul Gilbert, who is the member of the BC Disability Caucus Group. Now, going back to the Disability Embrace for just a moment, on our break, So we talked about a lot of the issues that was happening with the provincial government and what's happening with the embracement on disability rights.
Yes, it's interesting to see when we see the people with disabilities in the provincial government, Stillwell, et cetera, the three of them, they're all right wing neoliberal representatives.
Mm-hmm.
And not advocates of social change,
right?
Advocates of the status quo, and when you look at Britain at the same time, similarly, when the Labour just had brought up two disability advocates with disabilities into the Labour Party, and they were elected as MPs, and They're going alongside of ones that are already there. There were already three MPs there with disabilities, two of them with conservative and one of them with a liberal Democrat.
Yeah, I was gonna bring up that topic on the UK Labour MPs with disabilities on it. So, what's your point? What your take on that?
I'm very pleased that they actually are disability advocates, because I advocated quite strongly when I was involved with the BC NDP that if they want to have people running for office, that the Disability Caucus would suggest to the party that they'd want them to be disability advocates, not just people with disabilities that didn't do any advocacy, had never been marginalized, and didn't understand the difficulties people with disabilities face in society. When you choose people who have a privileged background, it's not surprising that they support the status quo and neoliberalism and all that, and so that's what you get. You get people who aren't going to advocate for change. Mm. But Labour's come up with some good people that will advocate for change.
Mm.
The whole picture is I was interested to see that Naomi Klein's new book No Is Not Enough just was introduced today on Democracy Now.
Mm.
And it's when you look at people like Corbyn or Saunders or maybe Nicky Ashton,
right,
in the federal NDP race, they're combating the old neoliberal mantra that the only thing that's available for anybody is neoliberalism, where basically the rich control society and everybody gets crumbs.
Right.
What Naomi Klein was saying, and I think the disability community has to say to the people who have power, is that we know that things don't have to be like this, and we want them to change, and here's how.
Yeah.
Right now, we've got a vacuum in Canada with everybody's hopes pinned on Trudeau. All the things that he was running for that he's not supported after he was elected, that people like Nicky Ashton are filling that sort of void, I think, in coming up with ideas that talk about a more just society and support for people with disabilities and support for everyone else, too, with a real economy.
Mm.
It's important that we actually create stories about where we want to take things rather than just say, no, we don't want that.
Right. So, I just lost your information, but it is very interesting to hear that they've got a book on it in Britain. Has anybody mentioned here about the difference between our disabilities and their disabilities in Britain?
No. There's. I imagine it's pretty universal.
Okay.
About as diverse a group population as you can have, the largest minority group in the world,
mm-hmm.
most excluded too.
right. I tend to agree on that.
But they have. As far as their MPs are concerned, yes, they Sam Sullivan and Stillwell and the third one, I can never remember her name. They're all in wheelchairs. I imagine they all have spinal cord injuries.
Right.
In Britain, they have a deaf Liberal Democrat, a conservative with CP and osteoarthritis, and then another conservative with CP.
Mm.
There are two new MPs. One of them has cerebral palsy,
mm-hmm.
and the other one is blind.
Right.
So it's there's some diversity there.
Mm.
The old idea that there's a hierarchy in the disability community where the people with wheelchairs, probably somebody that looks like Rick Hansen would be at the top.
Right. Another famous celebrity, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Now, going back to the book, No Is Not Enough, have you read the book?
No, it was just introduced. She's just introduced it. It's just been published.
Okay.
So I just followed her interview. She's talking about the reawakening of a utopian imagination.
Right.
We're uncertain about. We have social movements that are surging across the world, in the U.S. with Saunders and Corbyn in the U.K. And basically showing people that we can have bold platforms and bold visions about where we want to go with our society, and not just accept what the neoliberals tell us that we have to just accept the fact that neoliberalism is the only option we have.
Right.
That the society will be run by the rich.
Right.
And this recent election is a testament to the fact that that's the BC population doesn't accept that. The Liberals were known as the party of the wealthy, and the NDP was saying they wanted to provide a government that represents everybody else.
Mm.
So it was quite a shift here too.
Right.
We're talking to Paul Gilbert, and he's the member of BC Disability Caucus. On Facebook, and your website is facebook.com/
BC Disability.
BC Disability. All right, good to know. So on Inclusion BC, you can also check out their website, inclusionbc.org. This coming June, we're having a thing on Disability Pride. Now, you can check them out on disabilitypride.ca for more information on the celebration and the march that is happening on June 15th in Richmond. I'm just wondering, are there any events that are happening in the Victoria region?
No. We thought about it, but we were sort of torn between that and a few other suggestions. The Richmond Center of Disability seems to be central in that sort of
right.
That event. I was, unfortunately, they scheduled the beginning of it too early in the day, so I couldn't make it over on a ferry.
Oh,
but
okay.
They do that a lot in Vancouver.
Yeah, it's just interesting that you have a special event that is happening in Richmond and not happening on the island, which is a shameful and sad, of course, but, you know, very hard to do while you have people on both sides, like the main area, and, you know, where you're close to the border and you have a lot of people that are happening in the facilities that have, you know, main events that are happening. I was just wondering if there was anything that could be closer to where the island is and what they're doing on those kind of events, that sort of thing.
As far as I know, nobody's taken up the challenge. The Independent Living Center in Richmond decided to focus on this. They're very active.
Mm-hmm.
They're quite an interesting organization. They're very active in the community.
Yeah.
The Independent Living Center here is active as well, but they mostly are providing the traditional independent living programs.
Okay.
And as well as employment related programs. But the Independent Living Center in Richmond they're more active as far as advocating for disability.
Yeah,
I've noticed quite a bit more than most independent living centers, which is heartening. The independent living movement in Canada is non-advocacy, which is interesting because the independent living movement began as an advocacy activity. In Berkeley, California, the students there it started as a protest against the fact that things were inaccessible for people with disabilities, and the original people that did it were students at the University of Berkeley.
Mm.
So advocacy has always been part of the independent living movement in the U.S., but not in Canada.
Mm. And two of my favorite, two of our former co-hosts that we used to do on our show, Dave and Lori Sherrod, I got a big shout out to them because they originally started this show, this program, Community Living Show. They're part of the BC People's First, which is a nonprofit provincial organization that is part of the national movement. So they work on to make sure people with developmental disability are respected and included with communities with full citizens. And you can check them out, www.bcpeoplesfirst.com.
And they just had their AGM a little while ago in Vancouver.
Yes, I was there at the AGM in Coquitlam. It was pretty interesting. They've elected 3 members of the board.
Good.
Which was very interesting to see. And special presentations and prizes that were on there. So, again,
I was always heartened to see the People First movement, the response that the charity that the Community Living Organization did is they started their own little sort of People First movement inside of themselves. I was glad that the People First movement kept on thriving despite the fact that there was sort of competition. But I don't see the Community Living Organizations doing that any longer. That's a good move forward.
Mm. Interesting. Community Living BC now on their website, communitylivingbc.ca. That's their website for anything to do with the community living. And of course, they provide working strength communities for individuals and families.
Yeah, sorry, I keep on getting stuck on the old organization's name. It's now called Inclusion BC that was originally doing that, setting up things that were similar to People's First within their organization, but now no longer. Inclusion BC I've always been quite impressed with them because they will actually speak out on behalf of people with disabilities.
Right.
You don't usually, a lot of nonprofits won't do that.
No, I probably won't. All right. So on the one of the Inclusion BC is called the Pride Celebration March. It's on Vimeo.com, and of course I'll play a clip on it, and I'll put you on hold for the segment here in just a moment here. So I'm just about to push some buttons here. So here we go with the Inclusion BC here. It's a bit of a
Emily's
little introduction.
Gift, I think, is in bringing people to her. And she has an enormous capacity for teaching. And it's been so interesting over the years to see how she has changed people's lives and how through knowing her, they have come to know different things about themselves, different things about their communities, and ways that they can become even more accepting and inclusive and compassionate.
This is the event happening on June 15th.
Is it on national television? Or is it from an indie group?
Indie.
Okay, indie's fine.
Yeah.
And again, it's on Disability Pride, hashtag Disability Pride on the site. So, again...
Yeah, the reason why we didn't get involved in setting anything like that in Victoria was because we're sort of challenged by the amount of energy we can expend on some things. We've done a lot, 3 rallies in the last year, and right now we're actually looking at two big issues that people have wanted us to take some forward movement on, and one is human rights / class action lawsuits.
Yeah, I got a chance
in that capacity.
Yeah, I got a chance to interview with Annette Duplate from Access Television. It was very interesting to hear their interview talks.
Oh yeah, it would be.
Yeah. So it was very interesting. You can check them out, accesstelevision.ca. That's the website. And of course, I don't know if it's on Shaw anymore on the month of, it was on the month of May, but I'm assuming June is a different topic altogether. So it was very interesting to talk. And then of course we will, I will have some more clips on it after June. On the events and everything that will happen on there. So
I imagine a lot of people with disabilities are looking forward to getting their extra money from the provincial government and their bus pass back.
Yes, that's going to be very interesting.
The next step will be their poverty reduction plan, which will be really important because that will embody the increases that go beyond the original extra $100 a month.
Mm. Yeah, that should be interesting. What are your other outtakes before we go to for our conclusion? What are your outtakes of what's going to happen with the next provincial government?
Well, the one thing that I'm quite excited about is their poverty reduction plan and their economic development activities, including housing and expenditures on transportation and on new technologies. But the poverty reduction plan, I'm very hopeful that it'll actually look at marriage equality for people with disabilities, which includes which basically is the clawback that people suffer from, where they if they're living with somebody, their income is taken away from them because the other person is making some money. It makes people with disabilities dependent upon the person they're living with financially, and that's the one main reason why we're looking at lawsuits, because I don't believe that the government will. I have doubts that the government will get rid of that clawback on family income. So we want that to change so that people with disabilities who are living with somebody don't lose their disability supports.
And then on your Facebook page, about Laura Miller out of BC Liberal Poverty, The Breaker. Explain about
The Breaker.
You had it on Facebook.
Oh yeah, we got it's
from hard the Breaker
to
keep
track,
News.
Track of everything we have. On our
no
page.
Worries.
The Breaker.
It says top BC Liberal staffer Laura Miller is out as her trial on criminal breach of trust and changes near Ontario.
Ah. Yes, well, they do pick them, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds interesting. I thought you had any takes on this issue.
The political corruption in the BC Liberal Party?
Yeah.
Yes, that's why we needed a change in government. We desperately needed a government that wasn't in bed with the people who have power in BC and following their takes. Did you see Richard Zussman just tweeted recently that the three cabinet members are in wheelchairs? Not sure if Canadian, as it's Canadian record, but very likely is, and big step for inclusion.
Mm. I haven't looked at it. I might have a look at it later.
Yeah, I responded to him this morning asking him, I said basically the privileged disabled MLAs don't speak for the marginalized.
Right.
Let's look beyond cosmetics. 50% of the homeless are disabled, and who speaks for them or those discriminated in work?
Right.
Retweeted what Spring has said. She said, exactly, wake me when Sam Sullivan and Stilwell condemn forcing people with disabilities into poverty, yell when they find supports demand access laws. Mm. It's interesting when somebody is as prominent and he's a CBC reporter as Richard Zussman, it seems kind of oblivious to the fact that the disabled aren't being represented by these people, by those three MLAs.
All right, Paul. So your Facebook website is facebook.com/ BC Disability. The BCD is capitalized.
Oh yeah, it's at BC Disability if they want to find it.
That's on Twitter as well, right?
Yes, BC _disability on Twitter.
Okay, so and then your email address?
BCDisabilityCaucus@gmail.com.
@gmail.com. All right. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you
for all the information on happening the government and everything. So thank you. Thanks again.
Yes, have a good day.
We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Paul Gilbert, the member of the BC Disability Caucus, and thank you so much for having us on the show. We're going to take a break for a moment, and we'll maybe do some other issues as well along the Community Living Show. So stick around. We'll be right back.
GOSA, the Global Outreach Students Association, offers students the chance to learn about global health and international development while providing students with opportunities for practical experience working within disadvantaged communities both locally and internationally. They also collaborate with other clubs to organize global health-related symposiums and competitions. Executive positions are available. Contact them at ubc.gosa@gmail.com.
It must have been very hard for your dad when you got chosen and had to leave.
Yep.
You're feeling nimble?
I'm feeling confident, yeah.
You might get a little dirty.
Right.
Offer itself to me, because in Ardennes at teachings, it's the animal that offers itself to you.
Through June 16th, CITR 101.9 FM and Discorder Magazine will be launching two radio documentaries a week. The theme of community unites this round of pieces, with documentary topics ranging from alt-right discourse at UBC, the narratives around Chinatown tunnels, Indigenous food sovereignty, and more. To listen, search CITR Documentaries in iTunes, Stitcher, or visit citr.ca/CITRDocs.
All right, welcome back to the Community Living Show on the National Campus and Radio Association Networks. That's the NCRA Radio Networks. We're doing it on two stations now, and who knows, we might, and of course we do post them on Program Exchange as well for other radio stations. If they get a chance to hear our show, they can pass it along with many different people in the NCRA group. That's what we called it, the Program Exchange for it. And it was very interesting to hear. I was at the conversation over at Abbotsford, and it was very interesting to hear some of the stations that they had to commit and stuff. So it was very interesting to hear. And yeah, so you are tuned into the Community Living Show. I am, of course, Kelly Rayburn. Michael Rubin Cloggs is away on assignment. He's doing a thing on Fibromyalgia Wellspring Foundation, which is the cure for fibromyalgia. So they're off to different place to place, and he of course is doing a film. He's the film management for this project. So big shout out to Michael as well. If you check under Metro newspaper today, there's a duck as a segment on Genna Buck from Toronto Metro on designs of disabilities, and I'll read you the story. Macaulay Warner and Ryan Palbury, I believe their business, which has been explosive growth over the last year and a half, provides concept of design for disability. Their idea, whose line has to come? Their Victoria-based company, Elise, hard to pronounce, excuse my pronunciation, makes decorative plastic covers for prosthetic legs, like special designs for one-legged people that want to have two legs. The Instagram thinks it's too so. The social media grant recently featured Ali's on its own home feed, and its Instagram stories providing a huge boost to the brand. Quote by Warner said, "The only reason our business is on Instagram. Until recently, design photos." Photosys was exclusively focused on making pieces functional and lifelike, not beautiful but stylish. Expand. Early in the business, there was a pushback both from amputees and people with prosthetics industry who desired prioritizing design and fashion to be, quote, flavorous. Ellie's does much of marketing through ambassadors in social media maverns who model the covers in exchange for pre-product. Some people call themselves ambassadors, even though they have no formal relationship with the company. Warner said they must love their covers that much. The official ambassador is University of Victoria Fine Arts student Emily Vanderburgh, who's 21. She had lost her leg to cancer at the age of 17. She had lost prospect cover, helped her connect with this new book and new chapter, end of quote. During her first few months as an amputee, before she had a cover, people often came up and asking her how she lost her leg. Any kind of approach is negative connotation, unquote. But after she got the cover, quoted, the conversation completely changed to completely me and admiring the plastic piece that exemplified my personality. It allowed people to comfort talking to me, she quoted. Then she go on and saying, honestly, I've never met more original thinkers. They recognize the prothetics, and had been viewed as a clinical medical device that is perception doesn't encourage people to feel proud of their acquaintances. And of course, the story goes on and on, and it's on page 10 on the Metro newspaper. Anyway, so just before we go, we do have a Facebook page, communitylivingradio.com/groups/communitylivingradio. See Living Radio, I should say. So that's our website for our Facebook page. And of course, you can always email us, myself or Michael Cloggs, to communityliving radio@gmail.com. That's all in one word, communityliving radio@gmail.com. And of course, this coming week on Thursday, just to let you know, Inclusion BC is doing the disability special on Disability Pride. Hashtag Disability Pride if you want to check them out on Twitter. And yeah, so the event starts around like 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock in the morning, goes right through until 1 or 2 with the parade, and free pancake breakfast there. So do join over there over near Richmond Center around the facilities, and join the parade, eat the free pancakes there, and yeah, there'll be a lot of festivities, celebrations there. So yeah, so check them out, www.disabilitypride.com or www.inclusionbc.org. That's the website. On behalf of myself and, of course, Michael Ruman, you have been listening to the Community Living Show here on the NCRA Radio Networks and, of course, two of the stations, CITR 101.9 FM and streaming online at cooperadio.org and, of course, Co-op Radio and, of course, CITR.ca. So it's a mix of both. We, of course, we just moved our station from Thursday morning to Tuesday afternoons, which is now from 1 to 2. And possibly we're going to do the same with Co-op Radio from Sundays from 10 to 11, starting July 2nd. Hopefully you can join us then. Anyways, that's pretty much it. So thank you very much for tuning in, and I will see you all again next week. Have a great day, everybody, and we'll see you again soon. Bye-bye. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM and streaming online at CITR.ca. Of course, that was the Postmodern Jukebox by Robin Adele Anderson. Of course, they're coming to town on June 30th. That is happening at the Orpheum Theater. Time starts at 8 o'clock. Tickets are arranged like $54. You can also buy them online at coastaljazz.ca/postmodern_jukebox. We're going to play you another one. This one's on Material Girl by Gurnet Carling. Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you all again soon.
Velvet Dinosaurs and their latest hit, Eating the Plate. Now let's go to the phones and hear what you have to say. Go ahead, caller, you're on the line.
Master Dirty Red Scum!
Really?
Kill! That's really kill! Bad. Kill! Filthy bastard Tommy! I hate him!
Okay, well,